This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit mensteeclinic.com.
Hour number three of the G-Bag Nation. How do you think your school, if you're in a new conference, is going to fare this year? And do you like Pat McAfee on College Game Day? Let's talk some college football as the countdown to fall is on. We're 3 weeks away from going to Cowboys training camp. We're also the home of your World Series champion Texas Rangers. Corey Seager not in the lineup again tonight. It will be Josh Smith batting second and playing shortstop. Marcus Semien continues to lead off. Nathaniel Lowe will be batting third at first. Adolis Garcia DHing and batting fourth. Wyatt Langford in the five hole in left field. Jonah Heim sixth and catching. Travis Jankowski will be in right field batting seventh. Leody Taveras at center field batting eighth. And Jonathan Ornelas will be man in that hot corner at third.
Let's go, Rangers.
And the bottom of the lineup. Rangers looking to win three in a row with John Gray on the bump. A couple hours away from talking with Jared Sandler, getting you set for that. Zach Wolchuk, Brian Broaddus, Eric Chiafalo, Lucius Alexander, and Carter Freeman, who's joining us in studio now.
Hello, hello.
Talking some college football now. Your Oklahoma Sooners, as you wear your Oklahoma gear.
Loud and proud.
Austin Peay?
Yeah, it's a shirt that says Let's go Pee. Why would I not buy this?
I mean, he's got
the OU hat.
OU and Austin all in one package together.
Let's go Pee is a good shirt.
My favorite FBS school and my favorite FCS school. All levels of football I like to represent.
So I know we got Oklahoma fans. We got Texas fans listening. We got SMU fans, Colorado. If you've got a school that's joining a new conference, how do you think you're going to fare? 877-881-1053. ESPN put out an article today by the numbers of how they predict these teams to do. Oklahoma going from the Big 12 to the SEC. Their projected wins, 7.5. They're projected to win 3-4 games in conference. Their strength of schedule ranking is third. And they write for years, OU fans like Carter Freeman complained about a lack of thrilling big-name regular season opponents, for better or worse. The Sooners are getting exactly what they've craved. Not every SEC team plays elite teams week in and week out, no matter what SEC fans want to tell you, Brian Broaddus. But after a light non-conference slate, Oklahoma damn near does exactly that. Of its 8 SEC opponents, 6 are projected 16th or better in their power rankings, and the worst of the bunch is number 43, South Carolina. So that projects the Sooners as one of the best 15 teams in America and gives them a 7% chance of going 10 or 2 or better. The average top 5 team could accept a win percentage of only about 9.5 wins against this slate. So they think this is going to be a rough schedule. Oklahoma's lucky if they get to 8 wins.
I think 8-4 is pretty attainable, honestly. I mean, you can correct me if there's a ton of bias coming from this, but I look at OU as a program on the rise, and I don't see why we shouldn't. Like, yes, Venables and OU went 6-7 in his first season, but they went 10-3 last year. Like, I don't think people are giving them enough credit for how well they played last year. And I know they lost Dylan Gabriel to Oregon, but the reason he left was because they have the stud 5-star freshman, Jackson Arnold, coming in.
Denton Guyer.
People are expecting a lot from him. So I think that's what the season will hinge on. But if you look at the rest of the roster, a ton of the defense that improved vastly from 22 to 23 is back. The offense was a little bit of a question mark as far as the skill positions last year. They showed a lot in my mind, like the young wide receiver, Nick Anderson, and Jahlil Farouk. Like, a lot of those guys are back. And so I don't see why this roster and this team can't be competitive week in, week out in the SEC. But again, I'm wearing an OU hat, so take that with a grain of salt.
Yeah, and don't forget about the undies you're wearing, too.
In the socks.
Guilty as charged.
Texas.
I actually don't have the OU socks on today. I do wear them a lot, though.
They're giving Texas a better chance to have success moving from the Big 12 to the SEC. Their strength of schedule, not as high as OU's.
Yeah, because 14th. You know why? Because they've been poor for the last 15 years, and the way the SEC built their schedule in the 16-team era is the last 10 years, your record, the lesser teams or teams that won less play the teams that won less. That's why OU has a harder schedule, because they've been the better team over the last decade.
Horns are benefiting
from that.
Living
in the past over there, Carter?
They do catch Georgia.
They do
catch Georgia.
Their projected wins are 10. And they're projected to win 6 in conference. Compared to Oklahoma, Texas got off easy in its 2024 draw. The only reason the Horns are ranked even 14th in their strength of schedule is because of non-conference, taking a trip to Michigan in Week 2. Mm-hmm. They face an utterly titanic Week 8 visit from Georgia, 1 week after their Red River rivalry game against OU. But the only other top 20 SEC opponent on the schedule is Texas A&M. And they play them over Thanksgiving weekend. We get that rivalry renewed. That's going to be beautiful. But Texas, their chances in the SEC, they seem to be very much higher than Oklahoma's, mainly because of the strength of schedule difference here.
It is a strength of schedule, and they went to the playoff last year, so I think a lot of people are going to look to that. But they, and again, I'm wearing an OU hat. Take this with a grain of salt. They lost quite a bit from that playoff team. Like, their two best defensive players and a lot of their great offense is gone. But the thing with Texas that they've managed to fix under Steve Sarkisian is just a lot of the little things. They focused on building the offensive line like a real offensive line again.
Yep.
That's why they were so good at running the ball last year. And I know they lost Jonathan Brooks to the draft, but they have Baxter, I believe is his last name. I'm sure they've got some more 4 or 5 star freshman running backs coming in. Like, Sark is a great offensive mind. I don't expect it to fall off too much, but you did lose quite a bit of talent from that team last year.
They did. Yeah. Their offensive line's fantastic, and watch out for Jonte Cook, DeSoto's own. He's about to cook at wide receiver.
Just look at their schedule. I believe they play 4 teams with brand new head coaches.
And that includes
Michigan as well.
But Sherrone Moore.
You look at the situation, Mississippi State, Vanderbilt, and then, you know, Texas A&M as well involved there. And there's some coaches in the SEC. They're definitely on the hot seat, and they make those trips. They got Florida, and then they go to Arkansas. Those are two coaches right there that will probably, at that point in time, their teams could either be saving their jobs, or then Texas might have a little bit of a walkover against Florida and Arkansas with coaches that are probably going to be fired.
Yeah. Speaking of college football from the 469, 13 days away from the early release of college football 25. Let's get excited, baby.
So Carter, close. Are you on the early release?
Can't
are
wait.
You on the list?
So I'm going to be in Norman that weekend, and my buddies there have already pre-ordered.
Let's
the
go.
Game. So yeah. The Friday we get there,
boys,
that's probably all we're going to do is play this game.
That's going to be so much fun. You get to, that's like perfect timing.
It really is.
That's beautiful. SMU, AAC to the ACC. They're projected to get over 9 wins. They're projected to win over 5 games in conference. Now, of course, that strength of schedule considerably lower at 84. Now, they write the upgrade isn't as much as you would think for a team jumping from the group of 5 to the power 4. The ACC has 6 projected top 30 teams, including SMU. But Rhett Lashley's Mustangs are scheduled to play only 2 of them. They got Florida State in Week 6. Then at Louisville in Week 7. Otherwise, if they're really a top 30 team, like their power rankings suggest on ESPN, they could be favored in as many as 10 games. Are we expecting SMU to be a sneaky playoff contender this year?
I have said that SMU, as far as teams coming from a group of 5 level to a power level, their roster year over year in that transition year, it's as good as I think any of these teams have ever had. So, I mean, they won the American last year, and they beat Tulane, who was a very good team, in their conference championship game with their backup quarterback. So I think what Lashley's done there is turn them into a machine similar to what they were in the 1980s with a lot less controversy with the under-the-table money. Mm-hmm. So I really like them. That back-to-back with Florida State and Louisville is going to be tough, and they played Duke 2 or 3 weeks after that Louisville game. And that's a sneaky... They have Texas's old quarterback, Malik Murphy, and he's one of the more interesting starting quarterbacks going into at least the ACC this year. And that's in... That's at Duke. So that's kind of a toss-up game to me.
This is where the ACC schedule will drive you nuts. Because, as you mentioned, SMU's got 3 games in a row on the road. They got Louisville, Stanford, and Duke. They go Louisville, Stanford. So now they're on the West Coast playing a game, and then they turn around and go all the way the opposite coast to play Duke.
Yeah, they have a bye week after the Louisville game, but that's tough.
That is going to be a tough row to hoe right there. They got beat by, didn't they lose their bowl game, SMU, to Boston College
in
the Fenway Bowl, right?
They play next season.
Fenway Bowl. So, you know, I expect SMU to play well this year. I also expect when you need SMU to get a win, then all of a sudden it's a loss against Boston College or Virginia or Cal. So
yeah.
They have some stupid loss that kind of prevents them from, you know, for getting where they actually need to be.
And they were kind of like that in the American up until last year. They would start out 6-0, 7-0, and then find a dumb way. Like they lost to Houston a couple years ago on a last second punt return or kickoff return.
In Houston,
things like that.
They do catch Florida State early, though.
Yeah, week six.
That's their first ACC game. So that's going to be really fun. Really fun. Welcome to the conference.
BYU and TCU, too, on a non-conference as well.
That's interesting. BYU, that's always a tough out right there.
Yeah.
Pat McAfee, this is a story that I've had for a little bit here, but he remains unsigned with ESPN's College Game Day as the season nears. Did you guys like McAfee? Because I thought he added quite a breath of fresh air on that show with the kicking challenge that they were doing.
Yeah.
I thought he was very entertaining. Some people just don't like the style of broadcasting that he brings. Yeah. I do. I enjoy what McAfee does.
I think Pat McAfee on College Game Day was highly prepared. You know, I think when it came to his evaluations, his opinions, how he broke down the games each week, I love when they do their picks. You know, I mean, we all laughed about the Alabama pick against Georgia and all that buildup. But I think that Pat McAfee came with some really, really good information, you know. And I liked David Pollack at one time.
I liked David Pollack too.
But to me, give me Pat McAfee over David Pollack.
I thought they had a really good chemistry on the set there with Howard.
McAfee keeps saying, like, I don't want to be the guy that if everybody hates me, I'm not going
to
do this.
Well, and that's what ESPN, they issued a statement to regarding Andrew Marchand's report about this. And basically, the ESPN representative said, I think from time to time, Pat likes to just muse on what he may or may not want to do.
Yeah.
We're not in the business of handcuffing anybody to a table. This is not unique to Pat. If somebody comes to us and says, hey, I'd rather do this or that instead of that, we'll listen and we'll have those conversations. But they expect Pat to be part of College Game Day. Okay. So I guess if he wants to do it, he can do it.
Yeah.
But to his point, he acknowledges he's not for some crowds and maybe some of the pushback that he got because College Game Day, I think we're all kind of firing that up on Saturday morning, gearing up for college football.
Absolutely.
Some people just didn't like him, and maybe he didn't really like the backlash that he got.
Yeah, I think for the most part, he's pretty well received, at least on those campuses with the live audiences.
Absolutely.
He's a showman. I think he's fantastic. I love the style, the energy. I think he's funny. I love when his crew goes out there the day before and does their show on that campus. You know,
they get
the
head coach on.
I think the whole thing's cool, but if you don't like it, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, it's hard for me to dislike someone who buys into the product so much. Mm-hmm. And like, I think College Game Day is just a staple for me. No matter who's on it, I'm always going to watch it. Even with Lee Corso well past the age he should be on there, I'll still watch it for the headgear picks every Saturday.
They're not going
to
run him out there again this year, are they?
Yeah, they are.
I think that is getting to the point where it's like, come on, man.
Oh, it was at that point 5 years ago.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, but the thing about it is he's got that whole set. Nobody is. I mean, if you listen to interviews with Kurt Herbstreit, he will get run over by a car before he lets something bad happen.
They adore him.
Yeah, I know.
And I understand. Yeah, you're right. And it's cringy at times. It's hard, and you don't want to see him like forget stuff along the way. You know, it just reminds you. Hell, we had a damn debate where the guys were forgetting everything going on.
Sure,
you know?
Yeah, that's
so,
true.
I mean,
that's true.
That's the kind of stuff that we have to deal with. But I tell you what, that to me is one of the best watches. That show with all they do.
It's fantastic.
It's a great, great show.
And Lee Corso for president.
They're adding Nick Saban to this.
See, that's what I wanted to ask you guys.
I think he's going to be a part of things.
Okay, where does he fit into all this stuff? Okay, maybe he takes over the Corso spot. But is Nick Saban the whole show guy? Would you like him on the whole time or just part of the time?
I think either one would work. I'd be fine with him the whole show, but if you just brought him on for a couple of segments to go super inside a matchup or whatever, I'd be fine with that as well. But I think Nick Saban, like, that's college football. That is, he's sitting there the whole time. Yeah, it's my call.
Absolutely.
If you told me Nick Saban was going to be on all the time, bump Lee Corso out of there then.
Yeah.
I mean,
swap out one coach for another.
You can have Lee do his pick where he puts on the mascot head.
Yeah, yeah.
And you don't have to have him on the whole show. But if Lee still wants to be a part of this, hey, you're grandfathered in, bro. Just do that one part.
I do watch that show when he's on, and I'm like, please, just push me in the lake if I get to that point.
It's tough to watch.
Yeah, it's tough because you feel sad
really understand
for him.
What he's saying.
I remember when they were doing it in studio with him and Chris Fowler and Herbstreit when they started, and they were in studio, not even on the road doing this stuff.
Yeah.
Man, that was must watch.
Wow, you're
watch.
An OG.
Well, it was must watch. I mean, yeah. That's how old it is.
I know. Right, that's what I'm saying. OG, I didn't even realize. I don't remember a time.
Oh, no. They used
viewing
to,
college games that wasn't
first started, when they first started, they were in studio. And they never ventured out.
Took the show on the road.
And never. I get it, like the 972, he's going to turn 89 in August. I think Lee wants to keep doing it. I think it's not like they're saying, Lee, you've got to do it. Well, it's a Lee Corso choice.
They're going to let him keep going as long as he...
Well, and to be fair, their rumored replacement for him ain't much better. Herb Street's dog.
Always got to take a shot.
This Ben disrespect.
Always
got to
take
this.
A shot, man. I don't know what
you're
dealing with.
I'll tell you what, there's going to be a day where you and your dog is going to be running around and everybody's going to take shots at you.
You shut your damn mouth over there, Eric. All right, let's get to the top 10.
You need a
shall
support
we?
Animal over there.
Maybe a bee. Studio.
Maybe you can get a bee that'll
yeah.
Go
yeah, my
in
wife texted me and said, by the way, a bee is definitely not bigger than a jelly bean.
I saw a lot of pictures of bees going into straws.
Active listening.
What kind of straw?
Like just normal straws, man. Okay. They're not very big.
We'll see it.
Top 10 most American foods in honor of the 4th of July. What are you cooking up on your Independence Day menu? That is next on The Fan.